Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, welcome to Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg, and with me on the other line, as always, the one and only David Ramil. How you doing, buddy?
Doing pretty good, man. Just got back from my trip to Miami. Unfortunately, it wasn't a very pleasant experience because the Heat looked profoundly bad against the Utah Jazz.
Yeah, they're 2-6 now. I think a lot of Heat fans are, from you know, the vibes that we're getting and from all of our interactions, they're just not feeling it. This is strange, right? I don't know the last time the Heat have been this bad to start a season.
Yeah, it's a woeful start. 102-91 loss to Utah on top of a close game. They lost to Chicago, which we recapped a couple nights ago. But the score isn't nearly as indicative as to how much of a whooping it really was. There was a 20-point lead late in the fourth quarter there until Miami closed it in the waning moments. But it was a beatdown thoroughly.
Yeah, I'm not sure what else to expect at this point. I guess every time I watch the Heat, I expect them to compete at the very least. You know what I mean? They've been really competitive in a lot of these games. I mean, they were really competitive against the Spurs and a lot of other losses against good teams. But this was, like you said, it was a whooping, and it should have come. Like, the Heat are not going to be, very good, and the Utah Jazz are probably going to win 50 games this season. So that's exactly how that game should play out. But it's still just kind of weird because we're not used to it. I mean, this is a team that was in the playoffs. This is a team that is not that far removed from the Big Three era. Like, we have one season where we didn't make the playoffs in, what, the last 10 years or something? Not that many. Like,
last. Yeah. And that, well, we lost, we missed it a couple seasons ago.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. And then before. Yeah. The Michael Beasley draft year, 2007, I guess. What's that? 2007, 2008.
The old Michael Beasley draft year. But yeah. But, we're not going to recap the whole game, but.
But the thing also about the Jazz loss, and you can't discount this, is the fact that they were missing a bunch of players. They were missing George Hill. They lost Derek Favors midway through the first quarter, who got off to a blazing hot start. They were missing Boris Diaw. They were on their second night of a back-to-back set, having just whooped up on Orlando the night before. And on top of that, it was their fifth game in 7 nights on a 5-game road trip. So by all accounts, this should have been one that Miami should have been able to dominate at home, even with the loss of Goran Dragic, who sat out the game. So it was particularly disappointing. And there I was live seeing it alongside the Locked On Jazz radio broadcast team, and they're watching their team play as well as could possibly be when they're, shorthanded. And I should lose by every chance that Miami had.
Were they just happy the whole time then? Were they just like giddy and like, oh my gosh, I can't believe we're winning this? And you're just sitting there like, hating you guys.
Not quite to that point, but they were very encouraged by the resilience of this team, and with good reason. I mean, Gordon Hayward in particular looked very, very strong late in the game. He really did carry the team, had a number of baskets and fouls late in the game that would just, whenever Miami was trying to make a comeback, that would provide even added separation. Rodney Hood looked particularly good in his mid-range jumping form. I mean, he was really, really accurate. And they got key contributions from Shelvin Mack, others. I mean, just guys that aren't expected to play major minutes. Even Joe Johnson, who had started off the season particularly well, didn't play great yesterday, was looking for a shot a little bit more than he had to start the season, and was still more than enough to put away a Miami team that simply looked demoralized, outclassed, and just not particularly good.
Well, that kind of leads us into our first mailbag question. This is Mailbag Monday. We're back after skipping last week, just because of recaps and scheduling and stuff. But that doesn't matter because now we're here and we're doing it and we live in the moment. So the first question is Miami just bad? At 2-6, it's not, you know, they haven't won a game in what is it, the fourth straight loss now? So
yes.
That's not great. And just the stats say they're the third worst offense in the league. They're the ninth best defense, but they, you know, they just grind these. They're kind of grinding these games to a halt. They're starting to play slow again, and they have a negative net rating of almost 4 points. So they're giving up. They're being outscored by 4 points every 100 possessions, which is rare for this Heat team. I'm not sure when the last time they did have a negative net rating. I don't even think they had a negative net rating the year that they went to the lottery. I'm not sure about that, but
they're just. I mean, their lack of identity at this point, you're so inconsistent, you don't know what you're getting from them. And you look at the two wins, they're against an Orlando team that is struggling with their own identity issues and can't score worth a damn. And then against a Sacramento Kings team that was on the road also and completely imploded, with particularly DeMarcus Cousins picking up 6 fouls in the fourth quarter. So had he been able to keep his cool and maybe get an additional bucket there at the fourth in the fourth, and had he not fouled out, they probably would have won that game and deserved to have won it. And so Miami needed overtime to put away a Sacramento Kings team that isn't particularly good. And again, was without DeMarcus Cousins. So there's a lot of factors. So you look at the two wins and they're not particularly good. And then it was just a couple of weeks ago that we were talking about how they had provided more of a challenge against the Spurs team than any other team in the league. But we've seen that San Antonio struggled a bit as well.
Yeah.
They completely got blown out by Oklahoma City, so that's not even something you can take into consideration. Chicago, they're an inconsistent team also. And look, it's the start of the season, so it's a small sample size, everything else. But you're starting to see a pattern, a negative one, I think. And you know, you keep hearing Spoelstra saying that the team is making progress and getting to where he thinks they need to be offensively, defensively. But then last night he changed course and he said that they took a half step back. And I'd go further and say they took a major step back because they don't seem to have anything consistent there. And I think part of the problem is Hassan Whiteside. You don't know what you're getting from him. He should have dominated the matchup there, or at least, you know, he should have had more of an impactful game against Rudy Gobert. I know Gobert is a hell of a defender, but there were moments there when Whiteside could have done more and he just wasn't capable of doing it or just didn't want to. I don't know what the case was.
I mean, you're making the same point that Charles Barkley made a couple nights ago during the Bulls game, is that this team just doesn't have an identity. And I thought he was being a little – I didn't mean to insult you. I'm sorry. But
No, you sure did.
lost my train of thought there, but
you don't think he was he being too obtuse?
I thought at the time he was being a little too harsh. I was like, look, this team's brand new. They just lost Dwayne Wade, who has been their identity for the last 13 years. It's been, you know, at that point, six games in the season, or right. 7 games in the season. Of course, they don't have an identity. Like, it's been like 2 weeks. So, but to that point, you're right. They don't have it, and I think without having Goran Dragic out there, it was even messier. Because before, at least you had Dragic, who knows how to run an offense. Now I think, you know, they started Josh Richardson at point guard, and that's not, he's playing out of position at that point. He's more of a two guard. They don't have a true point guard because, you know, they jettisoned Beno Udrih and Briante Weber in favor of, you know, Roddy Magruder, who we'll talk about a little bit later, but. They said we don't need a true point guard because we have all these guys that are kind of like combo guards, so we don't need a backup true point guard. And maybe that's the case. I don't know. Like I said, we're 2 weeks into the year, but you know, going to that identity, you're right. We need more from Hassan Whiteside. He doesn't have that. You know, if he doesn't, you and I have talked about it. If he doesn't like dominate from the very beginning, you know, you fear that he just kind of starts to trail off there. And then at what point does he start hurting the team by being out there? Because, you know, I've been keeping track of these shots lately, and he looks, you know, I keep track of, like, he's like, why did he shoot that? And, like, the, you know, shots that he made where he should have passed it, like those stats that I've been kind of keep track of. And right. Every time I'm watching those now, it's just like, he's not even looking, you know? It's right. Just like, he's kind of just being lazy about it. It's not that he wants to shoot. It's not like a ball hog way. I think he's just like, kind of like, he gets the ball, he doesn't even make a post move anymore. You know, he just gets the ball and he just like automatically like ejects it out of his hand and towards the rim in that general direction. Sometimes it goes in and sometimes it doesn't. So
let me get your quick take on this, because David Locke mentioned on air yesterday during the game or rather Saturday, since this is when you'll be probably listening to this on Monday. But on during Saturday's broadcast, he mentioned that Rudy Gobert, although they have similar length and everything else, he has similar length, similar body type to Whiteside. Gobert is able to perform multiple actions consecutively. And he thinks that's something related more to physicality. But from my opinion, and I'm curious what you think, I think it's more cerebral in nature. I think Whiteside just gets engaged doing this one thing and then forgets to do something else. And it gets, you know, taken out of a play or doesn't react quickly enough. What do you think on that?
I think you're right. I think the physical attributes has never been Whiteside's issue, right?
Right.
Even if it's something like agility or lateral quickness or anything, I mean, we've seen that guy go from one end of the paint to the other to block a shot. So I don't think it's that a quickness even type of concern, and certainly not strength or size or general athletic ability. I think you're right. I think I actually really like that that insight, because I had never really thought about it. But he just kind of does the one thing, and to ask him to do, you know, not multiple things at once, but you're right, just like disengage from that thing you just did and go do this thing really quickly and react to whatever it is you have to do. I think that's hard.
Yeah, I guess that could be something that maybe you could attribute to the catch-all of basketball IQ. But, I mean, he grabs the rebound and doesn't know how to do anything else but just go immediately back up with it, even if he's double-teamed or if there's somebody wide open a few feet away. And I mean, he did have a very nice assist last night, so that was impressive. But at the same time, those things are too few and far between. And you need to see more of a quicker reaction from him.
But one thing I've noticed about Whiteside too is we talk about like him getting assists, and it's he only passes the ball when the guy's right in front of him. He'll never pass out of the post. I've been keeping track of this all year. He has not once passed it out of the post. That's insane. That's absolutely insane. I'm not even exaggerating. Not one time.
It's easy to look at his production and the Miami broadcast team. You know, they're always talking about Whiteside, Eric Reed, and Tony Fiorentino. And I guess there's nothing else to really hype up in a game like last night. But 15 points and 14 rebounds, but those could be empty statistics. He's chasing down a lot of these boards against smaller, shorter teammates. You know, if he was able to out-rebound Dion Waiters, congratulations,
And his efficiency has suffered a little bit. I mean, against the Bulls, didn't he score like 20 points on 20 shots? That's not good.
Yeah.
And just, it's hard to blame him, because so often he, for stretches, he could be the only consistent, form of offense for the Heat. So I hate to just, it's kind of like the Dion Waiters thing. Like, I hate to just keep piling on these guys because they're just easy targets, but you pay a guy like Whiteside the money that you're paying him and make the commitment that they've made to him, and you want more, and I think that's understandable. You want to see some reasonable growth from there. And, I think he kind of gets tunnel vision when he's near the rim, and that's all he can see is ball go to hoop, that's it. And then just kind of go back on that identity thing. I mean, we heard that the Heat had wanted to play faster, and they're not doing that either. Right now they have the 7th slowest pace in the NBA. In there with the personnel on this team, that they're not going to win games that way. They got to outrun people, and I wonder how much of that has to do with Whiteside, just because he's a big 7-foot center. And I wonder how much you can actually get out and run. And we saw Josh McRoberts get some playing time at center, and I'm wondering over Willie Reed, another true center, like a true big man,
slower.
McRoberts can get out there and run and space the floor a little bit, and I wonder if seeing him as the first big off the bench to kind of change the pace there, as opposed to what the Heat were doing with, the two true centers, with Whiteside and Willie Reed, you're playing a true center for 48 minutes. I wonder if they're going to try to get away with that and try to change the pace when Whiteside gets out of the game, maybe move a little bit quicker with McRoberts at center. I don't know.
You think that ultimately those two centers, the slower centers or the more traditional slower centers and Reed and Whiteside, are what's causing a roadblock for our quicker pace?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure if that's what it is. I'm not sure if it's a situation where these players don't know how to get their own shots, and so they take a little bit more time to get their own shots. I don't know if this team is, passing the ball a lot. This team passes the ball a lot. So that's one of the things. It's not like you're going, it's not 7 seconds or less. We're not going down and the first person who gets the pass is shooting it. You know, this is not a Mike D'Antoni thing. So they move the ball a lot. I think the ball movement has been strong, but they're not getting shots up quicker. I think they just they almost overpass sometimes. And obviously you're going to get fewer possessions in a game that way, even if the possessions are good ones. But they're not, because they have the third worst offensive rating in the league. So
yeah.
Something at some point, you know, the passing is there, but how effective has it been? Not really, by the numbers. And so I don't want to blame Whiteside for all that, because also Deion Waiters has been starting, and he's a prober. You know, he's a guy that gets the ball in his hand, and he'll dribble 5, 6, 7 times before he makes a decision. And when he goes to the bench, I wonder if that'll change for Josh Richardson, who's more of a catch-and-shoot guy, and they can play a little bit faster. So I don't know, man. I don't know. But just the whole thing is, like, what is this identity? Are they going to be a, you know, down-low, grind-it-out team built around Hassan Whiteside, or are they going to be a fast-paced team? Because right now they're not doing either of those things well.
Well, we did have an additional question, I believe, about Hassan Whiteside.
Yeah. So, with all this talk, people are wondering, when did the Heat, quote-unquote, blow this thing up? So we've got a couple questions about that. We'll start with Whiteside. Do you trade Hassan Whiteside this season? We've talked about a lot of guys. We've talked about a lot of scenarios. We really haven't talked about trading Hassan Whiteside. He's 27 years old? 26 years old?
Yeah.
So he's right in his prime. Maybe he has another couple years of his prime. Maybe, you know, centers don't have that long of a shelf life. True centers. You know, I know he's been out of the league, but he's been playing basketball, whether it's in Lebanon or the NBA. So it's not like he doesn't have miles. It just his miles haven't been on the NBA odometer, so to speak. But, you know, I wonder if this goes south and they decide that, and they come to the conclusion that you and I just, you know, were talking about, that maybe this guy isn't somebody we could build around. Do you trade him?
That's an interesting question, and one that I'm sure Riley is probably considering. You know, for all that he made Whiteside the centerpiece of this past offseason, much to, I think, the chagrin of Dwayne Wade and others, the reality is that you have to consider whether or not he might be Miami's best asset at this point, even with the huge contract that he signed over the summer. And I think it's also about looking exactly at what Whiteside's role is, and it's clear that he is not supposed to be the star of this team. He's more of a complementary player, I think, and that's something that you have to really consider. And you're paying him to be the superstar, to be a focal point, to be a guy who can, you know, facilitate a little bit, as well as be much more productive as far as his overall points, rebounds, blocks, etc. Even his block numbers are a little bit off, and though you expect us to pick up as the season does, at this point there are some concerns there. So I think you have to look at what his role is and whether or not he might be better suited for a secondary role. And right now you just don't have a guy who's more of the superstar willing to lead this team. And
yeah,
so if you're going
like
to have
a team like a guy that is compared to all the time, DeAndre Jordan.
Sure.
Very, very similar players. They're getting paid almost the same salary this year. So I think it's literally $1 million difference, I think. But, you know, he's got Chris Paul and Blake Griffin, who are really the stars of that team. I mean, both of them are guys that create for him and for themselves and for other teammates. And, you know, you're right. The Heat don't have that. Maybe if Chris Bosh was available, and maybe, you know, maybe that becomes a situation where it could be Bosh's and Dragic's team and Whiteside's there for putbacks and alley-oops and whatever. But I don't think Dragic, well, not, I don't think, like, he clearly is not Chris Paul's level. He's not an alpha dog. You know, Goran Dragic isn't that. I think he's like Whiteside. He's above average to good at his position. And, but he's not going to be your main guy, you know, and you're right. I don't think that he'd have that.
So, I mean, as far as trading him, I mean, he still obviously holds value because he can be a very good complementary player. And you need to get some kind of a center in return, right? Because you can't just start Willie Reed. I don't think there's anybody else on the team who can really be a viable option to start at center. So it depends on what kind of package you could possibly get for a guy like Whiteside, or if you'd have to include another player with him. But my feeling is, I don't know. The start of the season has been so demoralizing, I think, for me, that I'm willing to consider trading Whiteside. And I think that might be a little too foolhardy, a little rushing into it. But at the same time, I just don't see him being able to take another step in his evolution and development. And so even, if that's not the case.
And even if that's even if he is able to do that, right? Like he's only got a couple more years left of real of his prime. You know, historically, when an NBA player's prime, 26 to 28 years old, he's only got, you know, a year or two left of that, and that is he's considered a young guy. But I wonder if, you know, this team's window is past that. You know, we've got, you know, 20-year-old Justice Winslow, 21-year-old Josh Richardson, Tyler Johnson. These guys are, you know, 4 or 5 years younger than Hassan Whiteside. So if you're going to trade him, right, if this team's window is further down the road than what you think, if you're going to trade him, now's the time, right, when his value is highest. You trade it. I do want to talk about a couple destinations, but also I think I'm with you. I would start making phone calls. I would consider to start making phone calls and see what kind of package you can get in return, especially if you can get a draft pick. I mean, if you can get some first round draft picks, if you can get some real assets in return to just to build this team up from the ground up, that's huge. You're also clearing a big portion of your cap room. So these are all good things. These are all things that you need to rebuild the team. And on the flip side of it, though, if you're Pat Riley and you say, I need Whiteside to be able to attract other free agents, I can understand that. So it really depends on where Pat Riley wants to go. Does he want to try to attract a free agent? Because without Whiteside, I don't know what players come into Miami.
Even with Whiteside, that's not much of a lure.
I would argue that I think you have a better chance attracting a free agent without Whiteside. Because I think if you trade Whiteside this year, you just go full-on Boston Celtics and just play like the most fun style as possible. Winning games, not important. Just play at a really high, fast pace. Just seriously, like Goran Dragic, play as fast as your heart desires. Unless you trade Dragic too, I don't know. But, you know, just play like just be a top five pace team in the NBA. And that, to me, is more attractive to free agents than playing with Hassan Whiteside, who doesn't pass the ball. So, that's what I think, but I could see why Riley would say, I need some sort of foundation here to attract players too, because that's how he's thought his entire time. So, but I'm with you. I would seriously start considering it. Portland has been interested in him. Charlotte was interested in him. I mean, Portland's got an alpha dog in Damian Lillard. You know, Whiteside doesn't have to be the star of that team. I mean, even CJ McCollum, I mean, like, that team is built around the backcourt, but they're one of the worst defensive teams in the league. Hassan Whiteside will fix that really quick. They've got a lot of centers on the roster already that they've invested in, but, you know, you take a few of those off their hands, maybe you make a deal and get a Festus Ezeli back. Somebody like Mason Plumlee, who I really like.
So do I.
Yeah.
I've seen a lot more of him this season, and I really appreciate all the little things he does, and I think Miami fans would, in contrast to a guy like Whiteside, who can look a little bogged down at times and focused on one thing at a time, Plumlee seems to do a lot of different things simultaneously. He can do a lot of things. He reacts quickly. He hustles all the time, and he's a scrapper, so I think Miami fans would love a guy like Plumlee on this team.
And he's somebody that, obviously, in Portland, they have one of the fastest pace teams in the league for the last three seasons, and Plumlee really helps that. He can play on the perimeter. He can get other guys involved. You know, you can put the ball in his hands, and, you know, he'll make a smart decision with it. And if they're worried about, you know, defense, you can also, like I said, you can go the Ezeli route. I mean, he's coming off of an injury or surgery that he hasn't played yet this year, and he just got signed to a restricted free agent deal that's long-term deal. So, but you would have to get the salaries to work. So then you're looking at somebody like Alan Crabb in return, 24-year-old shooting guard. You know, somebody who can hit threes at a really high rate. And can play above average defense. So, you know, a package of like Whiteside for Alan Crabb and Mason Plumlee.
To me, that feels like a steal.
I would agree with you, but I think I think it would help Portland. If you're the Trailblazers, you have one of the worst defenses in the league. You were a bottom 10 defense in the league last season. You're not going to take the next step forward with this kind of defense. Like, you're just not. Like, Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum are, you know, they're scoring an insanely higher rate. They're making up 50% of their of Portland's points. listeners, if you can't tell, I watch a lot of Portland Trail Blazers games. I love watching them. They're like my league pass team. You know, they're built around Lillard and McCollum's just scoring a ton of points, and they don't do anything else well. Like, they just don't. And you're not going to take a step in the Western Conference with that. They're deep enough where they can lose Allen Crabbe, I think, and not be that hurt by it. Again, he plays shooting guard. They're deep at guard. You know, Mo Harkless has played well. They have Evan Turner locked into a four-year deal. I don't think they necessarily need Allen Crabbe there. And obviously, if you get a guy like Mason Plumlee, you know, you're not going to play him nearly as much because you have Whiteside. And if you ask Whiteside to, all he has to do is hang back. You know, I think Spoelstra, they're asking him to come out and play, defend the perimeter and everything like that. Terry Stotts plays a completely different, they play that Tom Thibodeau style where the defense, where the big just hangs back and all he does is protect the rim. And that they don't need him to score even 17 points a game, you know, just, you know, get there, score 14, 15 points a game on alley-oops that Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum throw to you, and then just defend the rim. And that's all we need. And all of a sudden that team can, I think with Whiteside, can become an average defense, and then maybe they become good. I don't know. I think that, I think it actually is a win-win for both teams.
Makes sense. I like the deal. I mean, make the call.
I don't know why I don't know why I argue this to you. You're on the same page as me.
I am.
The other team is Charlotte. I wonder if Charlotte, you know, Whiteside's hometown, so to speak, right? But they're really good this year. I don't think
they're exactly. They're on a hot streak right now. Then I don't think they need to disrupt too much. And I don't know that they would consider a guy like Whiteside being what puts them over the top of a team like Cleveland or Toronto or something like that. Yeah. I mean, Dallas, you know, had shown interest in him during free agency, but they've fallen apart a little bit. They're not a particularly good team this year either. I don't know.
Maybe they make a deal for that reason, but. What assets do they even have? You know, I could see Mark Cuban wanting to shake things up. You know,
but, sure.
Yeah, man. Like you'd have to take Bogut back, and he's on a 1-year deal. You'd have to take Bogut back just for salary reasons, but I don't really. You know, Bogut doesn't really fit what we're trying to talk about here about playing a fast pace, even though he's part of a really fast paced Warriors team. And I like Andrew Bogut a lot, but on a one-year deal in his age, it's not really what they're looking for.
Yeah.
I don't really know, like, the Justin Anderson type, Seth Curry, who's kind of developed into a nice player. I don't know. They're not going to trade Harrison Barnes.
No.
So.
Well, let's move on to our next question, then.
Is it time to trade Goran Dragic?
You know, we talked about this on a number of occasions, I think, but I just can't see. Look, last night showed exactly what was missing without him there offensively. You know, there's just too many. There isn't enough depth at the point guard position. I don't think either Tyler or Josh Richardson are equipped to handle the point guard load. Deion certainly isn't. So I think you still need a guy like him. Strange as it might seem, I think Whiteside is more replaceable at this point than Goran Dragic. So I do not trade Goran.
So I'm with you for the exact same reason. You trade him, and all of a sudden, you know, you have Winslow, you have Richardson and Tyler Johnson. You have them on this road of development, you know, in their lanes. Winslow is developing as a small forward. Richardson is developing as a do-it-all 3-and-D shooting guard. Tyler Johnson is developing as a true combo guard six-man, secondary ball handler, could be your go-to scorer in crunch time. They're all developing on that right track. You trade Dragic, all of a sudden they're swaying off that track, you know what I mean? Like, now all of a sudden they're like, all right, Winslow's not that small forward, true small forward. Now he's, like, running the point every time he's got the ball. Now he's a point forward, you know?
Right.
Richardson's got to play point guard, even though he's probably better as a shooting guard. And Tyler Johnson's got to play point guard, even though he's better as a shooting guard. So now you have all these, and so they're developing all these extra things where they're not ready, you know? They got to develop their true position first. So having Dragic in there normalizes and kind of stabilizes the whole thing. But if you trade him, you know, the case is he's 30 years old. It's not an indictment on him. It's just that he's an asset, and you need to try to get younger assets that fit the window that the Heat are in right now. And he's not part of that, so you trade him and just try to get another asset back in return. That does make sense. If they do that, you have to get a true point guard in return. I think you have to, and just somebody that can just start at point guard. And that just, you know, Dragic is a good point guard. You get an average point guard in return, maybe a first-round pick. I think you got to, and even if it's just somebody on an expiring deal, you know what I mean? Just, it could just be anybody. It doesn't even have to be a young player. Just somebody, just anybody to play the point guard position. You get that back, and then it starts to make a little bit more sense. That to me is how you make that trade, and then that's where I start thinking, really seriously thinking about it, because the other thing is, like, you have Whiteside and Dragic. I don't know what free agent looks at those two, and they're like, I got to play with them. And it's not anything against them. It's just like, you know, you have a huge cap. You have stars like Kevin Durant who are choosing Steph Curry and Klay Thompson and Steve Kerr over, you know what I mean? Like, you just have, like, these other huge all-stars and other in positions to sign players, to join other all-stars, and Dragic and Whiteside are just, like, the level below that. So I don't know, man.
Yeah. And the point guard position is one of such importance. And even when you're saying just, like, a quality starting center, you know, just somebody who can play the occasional, you know, or can start a point guard, you know, you look at a guy like George Hill,
yeah,
who's been so underrated for so long, and to go back to that Utah game, you know, he missed the Orlando game, and they were struggling to score. They struggled at times, although the score didn't look like it against Miami, but that's mostly because of Miami's poor defense, I think. And he's just a guy who brings so much value because he can shoot from long range. He controls the tempo. He finds guys open. He does a lot of little things. And this is a guy who, I mean, I don't think even when he was in Indiana, he got a lot of the respect for what he did. Not during the Big Three era. You know, he was just a guy who was out there. He had some pretty bad games in the playoffs. And so I think that kind of, a lot of people might have felt a little underwhelmed by his overall performance, but I think he's a guy who, you know, does a lot of things well, and he's a guy who would fit perfectly, I think.
So here's my trade idea then.
Oh, okay.
Goran Dragic straight up to the Denver Nuggets for Emmanuel Mudiay.
Oh my, you know, I don't know. I don't know if you've seen Mudiay a lot.
That's why he's a guy.
he's got a lot of potential. I mean, great size, very great athletic size, and all that.
6'5",
yeah.
20 years old.
Yeah, big body, but he can't shoot worth a damn. He's not much of a ball handler. His passing is erratic as hell, and his defense is non-existent.
But that's why they trade him, right? And that's why, like, sure. If you're Denver, you're already not playing as well as you hoped. Like, Denver was a team that they're deep and they want to make a playoff run, and the point guard position is a mess for them. I don't know who on that team. I mean, right now they've got Emmanuel Mudiay and Jameer Nelson. You know,
what they would look, the combination of Nursef Jurkic and Jokic. I mean,
Jokic, Gallinari, and Dragic.
Well, yeah, I mean, that would be an interesting one. But, I mean, there are two centers there, Jurkic and Jokic. They can't play together anymore, so they're going to have to package one of them. I would imagine they would probably move Jurkic maybe for Reed and Mudiay. Maybe how about a big package of Whiteside and Dragic for Mudiay, for Reed, and Jurkic?
Huh.
I mean, I think they want to unload Fareed. They've been showcasing him a lot.
He's been
getting a lot of playing. I don't think Fareed's a guy who fits in today's league. You know, obviously that contract came following that one performance with the world, you know, basketball team, and when he was with Team USA.
Yeah, and that's not a good deal, and I agree with you. If Fareed can't learn to shoot the ball at all, then
he's not going to.
But can you play him at, like, a small ball center? Like, if you trade Whiteside, can you just play Fareed at center? I know you're getting Nurkic back in your proposed deal. I don't know if they do that. I don't know if they want Whiteside. I don't know if they want Whiteside. I don't know if they want, like, a center like that. Because now all of a sudden you have to play him so much, and they want to play small a lot with, like, Nikola Jokic at, like, a small ball center at some points. I think you're right. I think that they need to make a trade and unload and maybe break up Nurkic and Jokic.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they want to take somebody like Whiteside back, though, because all of a sudden you still have the same problem, right? You can't play those two together.
Yeah, yeah.
So the reason I say Dragic and straight up from Mudiay, by the way, is because Denver has a ton of cap space, and they could just – Mudiay is on a rookie scale deal. Dragic is getting $15, $16 million a year.
Mm-hmm.
They could take that whole contract right now. Like, they have that much cap room. And so the Heat would clear all that cap space Again, I just, that's exactly the move that you, I think the Heat need to make, is something like that. Like, I'm not sure Moutier is ever going to be good, but he's 20 years old. He's right in that window. He's a former lottery pick. This is a guy with immense potential. You put him in Miami and see what happens. And if you're lucky, it hits. And if not, you know, you trade Dragic for Moutier straight up. Maybe Denver's, you know, maybe the Heat can get a draft pick out of Denver, whether it's a first-round pick or probably not right now because they're going to get a good pick. But even just like a second-round pick, just start loading up on draft picks, you know. You get that in return and you just make a deal like that. I don't know. I think that's the deal that the Heat have to make, if not just for straight up for a first-round pick. And I'd rather have a guy, a young guy like Moutier, who is a lottery pick, as opposed to just trading Dragic to a contender for the 27th pick in the draft. You know what I mean?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, they have a good core of international players on the roster already, so he might fit in a little better there. Sure. I mean, there's options there, so you wonder if it's something like that he might be open to. I'd hate to get rid of Dragic, I think, but if that move has to be made, that's not a bad one. So maybe you can get
Jameer Nelson back in return to just kind of be that stabilizing. Jameer Nelson, man, that's a guy Riley's wanted, right?
He has wanted him for a while.
You take Nelson back just to have a average to below average, but a pure point guard nonetheless, who could just kind of keep everybody in their lanes. Take Nelson back; he's on a 2-year deal, and get Moutier. I like the trade. So what we did was basically we just traded Goran Dragic to Denver for Jameer Nelson, Emmanuel Moutier, and Hassan Whiteside to Portland for Allen Crabbe and Mason Plumlee.
Well, that would be a better Miami team, I think.
I think we need to get...
I mean, they might not show up as better right away, but I think next season their ceiling immediately becomes higher.
And like I said, I mean, that's a team that can play fast. They could become a really attractive spot. I mean, you look at what Boston did. They just played fast. They loaded up on assets. They were able to just, you know... They have a lot of options to get better now that they're just waiting for the right one. And then they were able to not use any of those assets and still get Al Horford because he's like, it looks fun to play there. You know, it's not like Al Horford was like, I got to go play with Isaiah Thomas and Jay Crowder. You know what I mean? But,
sure.
You know, he's like, that looks fun. And Boston's cool. They have a great fan base. Miami's got all those same things. Miami's awesome. Great fan base. Great structure and organization. Top 5 head coach in the NBA. I mean, what... If you just play fast and play fun, you're able to attract free agents that way more. And they just need assets at this point. All right, let's move on. So we did all the trades and stuff, and that was a lot of fun. Let's start talking about what's actually happening, though, the actual players. So we're getting into some other questions now. First question. So Derek Williams got his first real playing time. He had played 3 minutes against the Thunder in garbage time, but he played for the first time for real again in that loss to Utah, and he looked good. You know, we talked about it a little bit earlier. Is it time for him to start? That's our next question.
I think it's obvious that Babbitt is capable of carrying the load. Look, we hope that he's going to be... Look, we talked about him as a starting power forward, you know, if not just because he's hitting threes, because of the threat that he can hit threes. At this point in time, it doesn't look like the threat is even there.
He played 5 minutes against Utah and they yanked him. He didn't play again.
Right.
That was it.
So it seems like the Babbitt experiment is fairly close to being over. You know, we had anticipated that Derek Williams was going to start the season and, you know, we didn't ever get clarification as to why he hasn't started, but that's been a decision that Spoelstra's made.
Or even played. Yeah.
Yeah. So at this point, I think he's a viable option. I think he's a better one, and I think you make the move now because, you know, you have nothing to lose at this point, and you could still salvage a career of a guy who's still a young player. He's only 25. He's, you know, played for 5 teams. He's looking for some stability, partly the reason why he came here. I think his value is at an all-time low, if you can believe that. For many people, consider him an overall bust, despite the chaos that he's, you know, played through over the last 5 years of his career. But, you know, he can bring some energy, athleticism, some erratic shooting. So, you know, you're not getting that from Babbitt anyway. So at this point, why not take a chance with a guy like Williams, who can handle the ball a little bit, who can finish at the rim a lot better than Babbitt can, and might be able to be an overall facilitator, you know, at a higher level than Babbitt, who's very one-dimensional.
Yeah, I feel like tearing my eyes out of my skull when I watch Babbitt dribble. It's so ugly, man. Like that whole Babbitt the Rabbit thing, that's a horrible nickname. Because he's not as graceful as like a rabbit. Like rabbits can like move and they're like agile and quick. And Babbitt is just like standing straight up when he's dribbling, like just really like, you know, clunky. And Jesus, just like don't do it. Like I'd rather him take a contested three than just put the ball on the floor.
I can't reiterate enough though how good he looks shooting prior to the games. Like seriously, like it is unbelievable to see that kid. His stroke is so natural and fluid. It's unbelievable. And so yet
maybe he comes in when, you know, it's not, we're not saying don't play him, right? He just might not be the starter anymore. And I'm with you. I like the X factor, you know, portion of Derek Williams' game, because he can at any given night he could, you know, just be one of the better players on the team, or on any given night he could be, you know, just god awful and one of the worst players on the team. But we're not getting anything with Babbitt now. Derek Williams started the second half against the Jazz. I think that's going to be a move. And it's worth noting here that Josh McRoberts, wouldn't be surprised if you start seeing him play more power forward, but he was the first center off the bench, so maybe that's how Spoelstra plans on using him for now, is as a center, small ball center. And Josh Richardson started in place of an injured Goran Dragic, but I think once Dragic is healthy and comes back, you'll see Richardson starting at shooting guard, which gives the team more three-point shooting on the floor, which means you can take Babbitt off the floor and put Williams there. So I think this is the time to make the move. Hey, they're 2-6. I mean, you might as well just make the move now. I mean, why not?
Yeah, absolutely. And
our final question, how can Roddy Magruder get more playing time?
Yeah, I don't know that there is any room to carve out for Magruder. I think, you know, we saw him getting a lot more playing time at the start of the season than we had anticipated, you know, bringing a little bit more energy there when Spoelstra was trying to shake out his rotation, and he looked a little bit, he did get some time yesterday against Utah, or rather on Saturday against Utah, and he did look decent in moments there.
Well, 14 points on 5-6 shooting, made 3 of his 4 three-pointers. Played 22 minutes. I mean, we're looking at a team like they need to find a way to get him on the court more. They do. Like, he is good. Like, he can defend. He can hit threes. I mean, he, from the small sample size we've seen, I'm getting the same feeling I got about him that I got about Josh Richardson last year, where it's like every time he shoots a three, I'm expecting it to go in. Like, Roddy Magruder is a good 3-point shooter, dude. Like,
well, he was missing a lot of those at the start of the season, though. I think partly why he lost playing time in the first place, though, was because he wasn't hitting those shots that we had seen him hit during the preseason.
Yeah, so, I mean, I like his versatility to guard, you know, three different positions. I think he can guard anything between a point guard and a small forward. I don't know, man. Like, I wonder, when Dragic comes back, how do you get him on the floor more? I'm wondering if it becomes a situation where, I don't know, do you play him at the three and you're playing James Johnson a little bit less?
If Babbitt stops playing Derek Williams, like, are we just going to have this weird, you know, interchangeable roster, you know, with different pieces there? I think Spoelstra likes what James Johnson brings, because we've seen him. He's the one guy who he's been going to regularly.
He's the holder of the power forward belt right now. I mean, you can't take that away from him.
No, absolutely. That's the ultimate.
Yeah. So I don't know how you get him on the floor, but I think you got to. I think you just have to. You're right. It's going to be like interchangeable lineups, and we're going to get back to where Spoelstra really had a set rotation, which I like. I like set rotations because I know what to expect, and I think the team builds some continuity. So I want it to be too erratic, but it might just be a factor of last night. You know, Miami basically just was losing from the opening tip, you know? So, I guess Spoelstra tried a bunch of different things there and gave Roddy Magruder some more playing time, but I don't know. I'd like to see him play. Like, I thought maybe he's a developmental guy. He's got under a 3-year contract, but he's good enough that he could play. So I don't know if it's something after they make that trade to Portland and Denver, maybe it's a situation where he's able to play then. But
and we should add also that I think a couple of the contracts that we're talking about probably can't be moved as quickly because they signed as free agents with their respective teams, including Whiteside, right?
Yeah, he can't be moved until December, mid-December.
At the earliest. But I mean, look, you know, I don't know if this is a normal occurrence, but Andy Ellisberg was pacing the court after the game.
I'm sure. Take one look at Andy Ellisberg. I'm sure that's not a normal occurrence.
I mean, look, he's out there. He's been around the team, and you wonder how much they're looking to actively shop players. I mean, from what we've heard, I think from Dan Le Batard, is that Pat Riley is running out of patience and frustrated with the start of the season. So I wonder if he's looking to make a move. And you know that they're, you know, for him, it's always about getting a bigger name, a free agent, a superstar of some kind, and hopefully. That might be something he's considering as well. But at this point, you know, the team is struggling. They're not playing particularly well. So you have to expect something will happen sooner rather than later.
Yeah, if this is the way it is, I agree. If this is how this season's going to be, and this is the way the team is going to be, which I think it is because this is the team. I mean, this is
– right.
We've talked about it before. I'm like, this is what they do. This is who they are. They're young, and they're not very good. But they can be good. It's going to require a lot more patience in a couple weeks. It's going to take more patience in one season. But I do wonder if he'll go the other direction than what we've been talking about and try to get another superstar. And I think that could be – I don't think that that would be the move if he can't really get a superstar. If what he gets in return is a superstar like Goran Dragic, then that's not going to work. You can't get that. Right. You can't get a B to B plus level player and still think that you're going to be a contender when, you know, you have the Cavaliers – what they're putting together, the assets that the Celtics have to make a move. I don't think you can get a bunch of B and B plus level players and expect to be a real contender. So I think you got to go the opposite way. And if you think Winslow and Richardson and Tyler Johnson are the guys, you got to go in their window or you trade them because it's one or the other, right? Either you know, build towards that window or you just reset the whole thing and try to get good right now, and the only way to do that would be to trade those guys, which I don't want to see because I like those guys. But
yeah, well, things are probably going to get a little bit worse tonight. Miami matches up against the San Antonio Spurs at 8:30 Eastern. That should be an interesting one, and Wes and I will be getting together after the game to recap it. So stay tuned for that.
Absolutely. So that's all we got for today. Whether you're listening on iTunes, Google Play, Audioboom, TuneIn Radio, Stitcher, I should start throwing other things in there, like just like kind of sliding other things, like Facebook Live. We're not on Facebook Live.
We will be soon, though.
We will?
Sure.
Thanks again for the mailbag questions and stuff. You can send those to lockedonheat@gmail.com, or you can tweet them to us at lockedonheat on Twitter or to David and I's respective Twitter handles. Get in touch with the show. Send us comments, sponsorship opportunities, maybe even some sponsorship opportunities to lockedonheat@gmail.com. If you aren't subscribed already, please do so to get the podcast automatically every day. Rate us, review us, say nice things about us, and we'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
Take care, Wes.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.